You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, 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 and welcome to another episode of Fly on the Call, candid conversations on music. This is a special episode because the podcast now has some amazing artwork courtesy of Michaela Jane Palermo, which I was blown away by when I received the finished product. You'll also hopefully notice a major improvement in the audio quality of the interviews starting with this episode. This week is especially special because not only is it the first full band interview for the show, but I'm also stoked to be bringing you a new song from our guests. Out of Service has their roots in the early 2000s pop punk and emo scenes, but since reunited in 2016, they've been steadily expanding their sound. Their second full-length, Burden, will be out later this year, and is a dark alt-rock record that has the band experimenting in some really cool ways. I'm excited to bring you a Fly on the Call first listen to the new single from Burden, called Stories. So let's roll the theme song, get right into the track, and then onto the interview.
Thank you.
for the podcast, could I just have you guys do a quick intro of yourself so listeners can kind of help separate your voices?
Yeah, so I'm Teebs. As you referred, I emailed you as Brian, but everyone calls me Teebs, and I play guitar in the band, and yeah, Brian?
I'm Brian, and I play bass in the band.
Hi, my name is Mike, and I am the singer.
And my name is Ken, and or Kenny, and I play drums.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about the new single, Stories. And I was actually like really excited when Deanna first sent me the link over, and I clicked on the Dropbox link, and I saw the just like the waveform of it. I really loved the look of the way it like builds throughout the song, and the song itself delivered a lot on that, especially like as far as the dynamics goes and also the lyrics. Could you tell me a little bit about the song and how that came together?
Yeah, sure. Well, I can tell you, this is Mike. I can tell you lyrically, the song is basically about my personal time in group therapy. So that song is centered around that, centered around kind of like the stories from the people I've met and the things that they experienced and how we all kind of found like a common ground to relate to one another.
And when we started writing this album, our drummer Kenny came to me, said he wanted a lot of songs that kind of felt like they built organically. So that was like, this was kind of a seed for that type of sound that we were going for, like more of like maybe less conventional song structure, but more like organic, you know, kind of type builds that we worked into this new album.
There's this song, and it's not even like a band that I'm really that into, but I think Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, isn't that their name? There's a song that they have that just like is this really, really steady build the whole way through. And we didn't like rip that song at all in the album, but I think just that idea of just having this steady build throughout the song, we just really wanted to create some moments in the album where we did that, and really think through how we could have those moments where it wasn't just kind of the conventional verse chorus bridge, you know, that conventional build, but it was more of that gradual crescendo throughout the song.
All right, this song really doesn't have verses or choruses. It's really just the song.
Yeah, definitely. I think like dynamics in an album are something that's like so important to me. So I definitely really appreciate that. And it makes sense you saying it kind of like coming, trying to make it happen organically. I definitely think that comes through. And I know on Stories, there's the guest vocalist with Madeline Finn from Envoy. And I was doing a quick like Google search of them. And it seems like they kind of recently just came back from a hiatus, kind of similar to what you guys did a couple of years ago. Could you talk a little bit about how that came to be?
So we met her at my bachelor party last August. We were at the Great Lakes Burning River Music Festival. And her band, the Whiskey Hollow, happened to be performing, and we were like really floored by their performance. So Kenny went and found their manager or something afterwards.
Yeah, I forget who I talked to. I think it might have been one of the members of the band. Yeah,
we pretty much decided we weren't going to leave the festival until we had a chance to talk to them to try to get them to come to New Jersey and play with us.
Yeah.
Which we did do, and we did set that show up, and then Madeline ended up coming to play. And then the relationship kind of kept going from there, and we asked her to be on the album, and you know, she accepted right away, and things actually moved really quickly, and we were really happy with how it turned out. She did an incredible performance.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. And I'm always curious to know about like guest features, whether they were kind of like pre-written by the band, or was it something like she came in and kind of added her own kind of flair and stuff?
Well, when the song was written, it was only written as having one vocalist initially.
Yeah,
right?
Initially it was.
And then we kind of were thinking about what was the best song. We knew we wanted to have Madeline be a part of the record, and we were trying to think of what was the best song. And this one seemed like a natural fit where there could have been, you know, dual vocals going on. And Mike kind of put together a roadmap of what that would sound like, but we didn't know exactly what her parts were going to sound like until we received the stems from the studio.
And I guess you kind of said like this was a good fit. I think that definitely makes sense, especially with like kind of the theme of like the stories and like every kind of talking about like different people's experiences and stuff. So I think, yeah, that definitely makes sense. And I know you guys did an Indiegogo both for this album and for the last one. Could you tell me a little about that process?
Well, I kind of, this is Kenny, and I kind of headed that up, and it's always so nerve-wracking when you go live with those, because you're like, you know, will people buy into our project? Will people be excited? And, you know, will the perks be meaningful for people where they feel like they're actually getting value for, you know, contributing to the campaign? So, yeah, both times, you know, different people have had different experiences with this, but we really were just blown away by the response and by the amount of people who got involved. And it's really a cool way to connect. We did a beer tasting, and in that beer tasting, both for both albums, we match beers and pair beers with the songs. So we explain how the beer relates to the song and why we picked that beer. Then we talk about the song and the writing process, and everybody who comes into that experience is able to get to preview the album with us. So, you know, everybody that came actually heard the album already, you know, months before its release. So that's a really cool time to connect with people and really build excitement. So anybody else have anything on that?
I'll admit, when we did the second Indiegogo, I was concerned that we weren't going to be able to raise enough, because we had a more aggressive budget for this album than we did for the last one. We wanted to do some more interesting things, and you know, we double what we did last
yeah.
time. I mean,
yeah,
we were blown away. We're so thankful to everyone who you know, who participated in that with us. It really meant a lot.
Yeah, it was definitely I was impressed, like looking between the two, and like you said, like seeing the kind of the difference in that. And it definitely seems like you guys have like a really like passionate, like keyed in fan base. How did that kind of start to form?
I think it's building community, and Teebs is really great at that. So I'll let him talk about that. But we built community both locally and, you know, just through the shows and the bands that we played with. And then online, we had a huge community that kind of Teebs connected with.
Yeah, I spend some time on a website, chorus.fm. And luckily, we were able to connect with a lot of people who, you know, gave our music a chance that maybe they wouldn't have found it otherwise. So a lot of great people over on that, you know, in that community. And we're very grateful for everyone who has listened to us over there.
Yeah, and even Teeps, like you've connected with people just at random shows, talking to them about the band too. And we've built a lot of people that way. So,
Yeah, definitely. That's really right. It's always nice when, you know, bands kind of like put that effort in to make those connections with the fans. And I mean, I really think it just makes it so much better in the long run. Like I love being that kind of fan that's able to feel that connection with a band. And you mentioned like wanting to do more and kind of like being more aggressive as far as like the funding of the album. And I know you did, like, I think you mentioned there were like three separate producers and, you know, different, you had a much different recording process than last time. Could you talk a little bit about how that came together?
Yeah. So when we did Morning, you know, we did everything pretty much ourselves as far as recording goes. All the guitars were done at home. The bass were done at home. We record Kenny's drums in his basement on our own equipment. And, Nathan Hussey, who mixed Morning and Bird in the new album, he kind of had to work with what we gave him. you know, we're not professional sound engineers, but we did our best. And we're proud of what came out of that project. But this time we wanted to go to studios. We wanted to work with professional sound engineers, and we did that. We went to a studio called SRG, right? Mm-hmm. For drums. We went to a studio in Pennsylvania.
Midley Grange.
Called Midley Grange. I actually still recorded and engineered the bass parts myself, because that's kind of, you know, you go direct typically, and that's the easiest to do. It saved us a little bit of money. And then Mike and Teebs flew down to Alabama to record vocals and begin the mixing process with Nathan Hussey down there. So we had to account for that travel cost and all sorts of other costs that we didn't have to deal with for Morning. So we knew we were going to have to raise more money, and then we did.
Yeah. And I'll say, in terms of like just production value too, you know, that's the engineering side, those are the studios that we went to, but we really listened to a lot of different bands and kind of researched where they recorded, found stuff that we're really into. And then that's how we kind of picked the studios that we went to for the different instruments. So like, I was listening to this local band who recorded their drums at SRG, and I was like, man, those drums just kill it. So we went there, and Sean there, you know, is just great with production. He, you know, there are a couple of times we're like, I don't know what to do. And he really guided us through it and helped us kind of trust our intuition. Whereas before, when we were recording at home, you know, and we would get stuck, it would just turn into this huge thing. And, you know, the results, you know, we'd get so much more stressed out, and we'd get there, but it was just a lot more difficult. And Mike can talk about the production process on vocals, especially with Nathan from All Get Out.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely wouldn't have been able to do half the things that we ended up doing without raising as much as we did with the Indiegogo. Cause I never thought I would fly down to Alabama to go to Nathan Hussey's house and record locally with him. It was definitely an interesting process. It made things go a lot smoother than when it was morning, because there was just so much back and forth. I would record something, send it to Nathan, have to wait for feedback. He'd send the feedback back. I'd have to record again, at least this time, since he was right in front of us. I mean, it just went so smoothly and so fast. Like, we just got to work, and then before I know it was just all done.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's really interesting how sometimes kind of like, you know, you think like the independence and doing it on your own, like how that seems like sometimes this could be the best idea to do. But, you know, sometimes, like you mentioned, like getting stuck, it's really nice to have that kind of separate influence of someone that you also really trust and connect with.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. No, and we tried to put our trust in the people that we worked with this time very much. If they told us something was going to work, we tended to believe them. So it made for a better product at the end, I think.
Yeah. And you mentioned that Nathan had done the mixing and mastering on Morning. Can you talk a little about how like that relationship started and how it's evolved over time?
He actually also did our EP. Basically I'm a fan of All Get Out. I was on their website and we needed someone to mix our EP. And he had like a little like blurb on his website. Hey, you know, I do mixing, hit me up. So I sent him an email. And they were he was playing a solo show in Philly like a week or two after I emailed him. He said, let's meet up in Philly. So we met up, we talked, and you know, he just seemed like a really good fit for us, where like he was really someone who would really work hard for you. And you know,
that's definitely true.
Yeah.
We do work him pretty hard.
We work him hard.
and he's amazing. We recommend him to like every band.
Anybody
says, hey, we're recording an album, you know, do you have any suggestions? We recommend him without reservation. I mean, and it was awesome. We got to play a show with All Get Out a week ago.
Yeah. Last week
You know, it's just a great relationship to have. You know, we kind of look to Nathan as like a mentor, and also as, you know, a friend too, I think at this point, because he's just come alongside of us as a band and invested so heavily into us. And it's just been a great relationship.
Yeah, we've literally been working with him for 3 years now.
Yeah. Yeah. He's basically what, the fifth band member.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or sixth band member. Sorry, Kevin.
Yeah. I mean, that's really awesome to hear. I feel like either a lot of bands you see going to like a different engineer and producer like every album, and then you see some that kind of like stick with the same all the time. It's really interesting to kind of like hear the differences in opinions, and like it's awesome when bands kind of are able to find that person that like really gets them and form that connection.
And every time, I mean, in every process we've gone through with Nathan's been completely different.
He keeps getting better.
With our EP, I mean, you know,
He upgrades equipment like every time.
Time we do a new project, he seems to get new equipment. I mean, with this record, this is the first time we dealt with analog mixing. We had a whole mix of the album in the beginning of August
and mastered.
And then he got some new analog equipment and wanted to try it out and asked us if we would be interested in trying it out. And then we ended up with a whole new mix. We completely remixed the album. Over the next couple weeks from there. And we had to dig into our budget a little bit more, and then, but it, I think for
it
the most part,
the difference, it, showed.
The difference showed. I mean, the sound really opened up, I think. And then at the end of that process, we ended up taking our mastering for the first time out of house with Nathan to Voodoo Studios, who took it from there. So
with Frank from Voodoo.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So like, what was that, like the process of remixing it? Like how much, how did that kind of go?
It was really stressful. So
I was at a Kohl's and he texts me, he's like, dude, I got the Analog Summer. I just used it on an album. What do you think about giving your album another shot? And we were like,
and don't get us wrong. We were really happy with the final masters that we had. But you know, he sent us one song. It's actually a song that's going to be the second single. And he sent that to us and we were just kind of like, wow, this sounds a lot different. And from there, we just went down the rabbit hole and it led to some arguments on our end about different things. Cause you know, there's always some things at the end of a process where you're like, maybe I would have done that a little differently. Well, now we had the chance, but we didn't always agree on what those different things should have been. But at the end of the day, I think we ended up with a better album. There was more headroom. It was more spatial the way that it sounds when you're listening to it. And I don't know, we're really thankful that Nathan took the time to do that with us because we think it worked out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, now maybe like 5 years down the road, you can end up doing like the original mix versus the remix, do some special reissues and stuff.
I have it downloaded on my computer.
I have the old masters. Yeah.
it's always nice when bands are able to archive that stuff. And even if it just ends up leaking out little by little, it's really interesting to see that process.
We have tons of stuff. Yeah. And we did full demos for all of the songs too. And that was a real difference between this album and the last one. We brought all of the recording equipment into the room, into our rehearsal space, and we recorded every song, each part, mixed it, and redid everything like multiple times to really get things to sit where we wanted them to. So we have that whole full set of demos as well. So we'll have lots of B-side stuff to release someday.
Mike, how many times did you demo the vocals for the album?
I think I did them at least 4 times.
Yeah, I think so. And they were different every time.
But in the end, like they ended up completely different.
Nathan got his
hands on. Yeah, Nathan.
Once Nathan got to me, we did a lot of stuff.
I think a lot of the melodies stayed the same though, right?
Yeah,
it was
main
a lot
melodies,
of the backing
but
vocals
we added
changed.
A ton of back vocals.
Yeah, yeah.
And changed a lot of harmonies.
Yeah, I mean, that's really cool when you kind of, that you had the time to kind of scrupulously like go over each part so many times.
Yeah, I think it definitely helped with the process for sure. Because with Morning, I remember we were writing while we were recording and that was not fun. I don't think it was not fun. And
it wasn't fun for
anybody.
It wasn't efficient.
But like at least this time when we decided to go to the studios, we'd had these parts written for a while and we had worked them into songs for a while, so I think the process just went that much more smoothly.
Yeah, like I remember with Morning, like there are a couple places where like I was like, man, if I had more time to like digest stuff, I could have been more fills, I could have done like some different things that we really were able to do on this album, because when I went into the studio, everything was written for the most part, you know what I mean? So it was really just enhancing some of those pieces
for sure. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like from the EP to the first LP, there was kind of like a transition from more of like a pop punkier sound to kind of like an alt rockish type. And then now from Morning to Burden, it's like even kind of like darker and like more experimental. Can you talk about how that kind of change in sound came to be?
Yeah, it really wasn't intentional. We just kind of started writing darker songs. And yes. Mike had a story for the album.
Yeah,
the album is a concept.
Yeah, it's a concept record.
I mean, we also, you know, we wrote the songs together this time too. Yeah. And I think that, I don't know that had something to do with the darker tone, but it definitely had something to do with how the structure came out on the songs and just the overall sound of the record.
For sure.
Yeah, and I think too, as we were demoing stuff, this was just the direction that we were going in. You know what I mean? Like as we were writing things, this is just what came out. And, you know, I think that, I don't know if it's just the mood of kind of where we all are at in our lives or just, or, you know, and like Teebs mentioned kind of the concept that we had. So we were kind of exploring some of kind of the darker like corners of life, you know what I mean? Whereas I think Morning was kind of this mix of like, kind of peaks and valleys. This was more just kind of an adventure into like, what are kind of some of the tougher pieces that people deal with, and how can we like express those and also kind of come alongside people in their struggles and say like, you're not alone, while also kind of living there a little bit more than we did in past albums with kind of that darkness. I don't know, with like, you know, it's, does that explain kind of some of the concepts?
I mean, the entire album, I don't know, I mean, tough time a while ago and went through some stuff. But it was never my intention for all these songs to like just purely just be about me and that's it. Like I always try to make sure that the lyrics and everything stays accessible to as many people as possible so that they can relate to it however they can.
Right, right,
so
exactly.
I think we succeeded pretty well on that.
Yeah, and that's that kind of like balance of that darkness,
yeah,
but also like coming alongside people and saying like, this can be like leaving it open, so yeah. It could be anybody's story.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
like you're not alone. Everybody's got a story, and you know, it's just sometimes it's nice to hear from somebody else that they're going through stuff too.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like equally personal as it is kind of like overarching.
Oh yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And I feel like there's definitely kind of like a branching out, both vocally with kind of some rougher vocals. And then, it's like kind of more like rhythmically diverse. I feel like there's almost more of a focus on, some of the instrumentals, and I noticed like a lot of the outros were kind of like jammy and stuff. So it makes sense that you kind of mentioned, that you wrote this more together this time. Could you talk a little bit about those kind of changes?
Yeah, I mean, I think with those rhythmic pieces, a lot of that came from us kind of stripping down the songs. I think in the last album, we were really focused on like having lots of transitions, and like I was playing like two or three different drum beats in, you know, almost every chorus of the songs that were on that album. And I think like guitars, like Teebs can speak to that, but you know, a lot busier, a lot more kind of that, like, no, like that chunky, like, still that kind of like pop punk influence, like guitars and stuff. This one, right. We wanted to kind of give a ton of space. And I think that's where kind of that more rhythmic feel comes through, because there's more space to kind of feel it, you know what I mean? And feel the rhythm. And, you know, a lot out of the busier, like 16th notes and eighth note stuff, that's kind of like all over the place on the last album, which we liked. You know, we were trying to strip that away so you could really just get to that essence of that rhythm at the core of what we were doing.
Yeah. I mean, when I was putting my parts together and when we were writing as a band to practice and everything, I was really focused on honing in on Kenny's drum parts and really making the bass and the drums lock, because we were really more focused on having the bass and the drums kind of drive these songs rather than just heavy guitars driving the songs. It's noticeable in the first song on the record on Threshold. It's also in Stories as well in the single. And I think that's kind of the more rhythmic, more, I guess, locked in rhythmic feels you're getting when you listen to the record. But then we kind of built on top of that. So that was kind of the idea.
I feel like it's more impactful when you hold back and then let yourself go, rather than our last album, a lot of the songs were just go, 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 go.
Yeah.
Whereas this album was like, let's wait until the end to get big, or, you know, let's not put 100 guitars on this chorus. Let's just let the two stereo guitars drive the rhythm and, you know, wait, hold back on that, like those, you know, those giant walls. So that was like definitely intentional, and it was definitely, you know, our right. goal was to create more space to lock in those rhythms better.
And so as far as the outros go, I mean, more of the songs have outros than I think we initially planned on having outros. Yeah. You know, we would be writing certain parts, and at the time, when we're just kind of formulating these demos, we weren't sure that whether there were going to be vocals there or not. And then it kind of came about again, kind of organically as we were going through the process of let's just leave this wide open. I mean, and then there's other songs like Chemicals, which has an extremely long instrumental outro, but it's got that saxophone feature that I think is pretty special on the album, kind of smack dab in the middle. We wanted to kind of do a little bit more experimental things like that as well. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sax solo at the end of that song really stood out to me. It actually reminded me a lot of, I can't remember which song it is, but on the most recent Runaway Brother album, they have kind of, not like similar, but just kind of like equally sort of like chaotic, like distorted, just kind of like jamming. And I really love it in both of those songs.
Thanks. That's my cousin on sax there. So shout out to Bill Kahn.
Yeah, we actually got to play that song live with him at our show with All Get Out last week. And it's probably a song we're not going to get to play live a lot. So it was a lot of fun to be able to do that.
For sure. Yeah, that's awesome. And how was like the fan reaction to it?
Oh, they loved it. Oh, yeah, it was. it's a crowd pleaser.
We were getting texts and stuff about that song after the show. Everybody was just going crazy. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's pretty hard to dislike a sax solo in the middle of a rock
show.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was special.
You gotta at the very least respect the band for bringing it out.
An album by a band called Kara Kara, Summer Megalith, and they have a song on that album that has like this epic sax solo. So that was kind of an influence as well. I was like, it'd be really cool to have like our version of that, you know?
Yeah, and I think something this whole album that we were thinking about, like last album, we didn't really have any auxiliary instruments. And we really felt like that was a missing piece of the puzzle to really kind of get to that next level and to get to those rhythmic, you know, some of that kind of what you talked about in terms of that differentiation between the last album and this one. So, you know, I added a ton of aux percussion. We did like jingle bells, we did tambourine,
sleigh bells.
We did tambourine, we did shaker, we did all kinds of other like percussion. We have flute in this album, we have sax,
we have synth,
and we didn't have any of those extra layers on the last album. So I think that's something that's really, it's not always in your face, but it just adds a level of texture to this album that really helps it, you know, kind of push those limits of what we were hoping to do.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting how that kind of, you took like the less is more route on like the core instrumentals, and that kind of allowed you to have the space to have the auxiliary stuff to breathe. And it almost is kind of mirrors the way you recorded in a way where you were, you know, able to do it in person. So it kind of went a lot smoother, and it was almost like kind of that less is more mentality again. It's interesting that you talked about spending like a lot of the time getting like the bass and drums locked together. I was actually talking to Shane Told from Silverstein yesterday about A Shipwreck in the Sand. It's their 10-year anniversary, and that's like my favorite album of theirs. And they mentioned that was like one of the things they tried really hard to do for that album as well. So it's really interesting that that's come up twice in two conversations.
I love that record. I think I just bought the vinyl a couple months ago for that one, and it's a hard hitter for sure.
Oh, hell yeah. It's definitely my favorite of theirs. I know I had read, I'm not sure when it was from, but you did like a New Noise piece a while ago about kind of bringing into the fact that you had the hiatus / breakup and then kind of came back together with the quote unquote like new music industry. And you kind of like mentioned that the biggest change for you was kind of like the potential of the music and the fact that now you can reach anyone in the world really easily. And that's kind of what makes it worth it. Could you expand on that, like that idea just a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, it was really funny. We were just talking about how one of our songs off of our EP, somebody like there's a number of people in Australia listening to it right now. it like bumped up to our top five on Spotify, and almost all the plays were from Australia and all from different people. So it's just, it's amazing how, you know, something comes up in a Spotify playlist, somebody finds it, and you're like, you know, people across the planet, literally on the other side of the globe, are listening to your stuff. And that wouldn't have happened when we were coming up in high school, you know what I mean? Unless we were like randomly, you know, paying $50 to send our CDs to Australia to random people. I don't think we had much of a chance, you know, other than, you know, getting signed to a major label, of getting people in that context to listen to us. So it's just, you know, I think that's one small example of just how much more connected things are now than they were when, you know, we were in high school, just, you know, making music and cutting records.
2002.
Yeah. Selling them out of the trunk of our car and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. It's really cool how that, like you said, how that is possible. And especially for, I feel like, bands on the kind of like more indie level who are doing it just as much for the passion as anything else. Just like I said, like the idea of being able to reach those people, it's definitely like a special thing. And I'm curious, going back to like the kind of hiatus and stuff, was there ever a time like any of you kind of stopped playing music individually, or was it a constant throughout your lives?
I kept playing music when, even after I was, even after we broke up.
Well, Teebs, I have a master's degree in classical performance, so on guitar. So I kind of have been playing a lot my whole life. So I never, I mean, when I shifted, my focus went away from rock music for a while to jazz and classical, but I'm happy to be back.
I mean, I stopped playing bass because I was alone. When I was in law school, I don't think I ever took my bass out even one time. But I still played acoustic, and I played guitar, and I played open mic. You know, it's just to get out there, and you know, if you don't use it, you lose it, sort of thing. But but yeah, I don't think I picked up my bass again until we decided to get the band back together.
So. I was in a number of bands between when we broke up, and I played drums, I played bass, I played some guitar.
Didn't you scream?
Mostly drums. I screamed in a band for a little bit. So
Kenny left us a little earlier than the rest of us left.
Yeah,
I left
2003, and I think you guys stopped in like 2004, 2005.
No, we went all the way to like 07.
Mike dropped out in 2005,
six,
right?
No,
six.
Was six. Six.
Okay.
We were in college. Then.
Yeah.
Right. In college. Yeah.
That phone call.
Yeah, we don't talk about that. Those are dark times.
that's why this
you make
this,
a whole concept.
This, yeah, this album's all about that. That's why it's so dark. It's just all based on one phone call.
It's not that. That's not true.
And how did it sort of come together when you guys decided to like reunite?
So I Facebook messaged everyone in the band, and I was just like, "Hey guys, like I'm bored. guys, I'm gonna start playing music again, because like we were all settling down in jobs and we were all in the area, and it just made sense. It's like I like had a kind of like I fell in love with rock music again, and I was like I had gone away from it for so long that when I started like really getting back into it, it's like I really want to play again, and I started writing stuff. And then so when I sent the Facebook message, I thought for sure no way they were gonna say yes, but I mean, I hadn't talked to Mike in like 10 years.
It had been a long time.
And everyone was like right on board right away. They were just like, let's do it.
Yeah, so. I mean, we...
Kenny didn't think it was real.
Well, I didn't, I'll be honest with you. I didn't think it was real. I thought we'd
just
together.
Whoa, just for context, Teebs used to chase cop cars with kegs of root beer and do big keg stands with them. So he's a little bit of a prankster.
He's a prankster.
So
I'll be honest though, when Brian sent me the message, I mean, I agreed to it immediately, and I thought we'd, you know, we'd get together, we'd jam a little bit, and that would probably be it. If you would have asked me back then if I thought we'd be, you know, doing a podcast with you about our third release in 3 years, I would have thought, you know, you're crazy. Yeah. So it's definitely been more, of a time commitment, and definitely we put more passion into this than I thought we ever would have. But it's become a huge part of our lives again, and we're really thankful for that.
You're here.
That's definitely like, that's really awesome. And you mentioned kind of like falling out of love with like rock music for a bit. How has kind of like your listening habits changed between the reunion, the EP, the album, and this album? Especially, I know you mentioned kind of like listening to a lot of different stuff as inspirations for the album.
Yeah, I mean, for me, this is Teeves on guitar. I listen to pretty much any major release in rock music now.
Lots of minor releases.
Yeah. But you know, anything that's being kind of hyped on The Alternative or, you know, Chorus FM or any of those. And, you know, for me, there's a wide range. Like I just fell in love with that new Microwave album. I think it's absolutely
incredible. So good.
Yeah. It's absolutely next level for sure. It's just, you know, anything that I see that comes out. And there's still stuff even from high school, like bands are still kicking around that I still love listening to. And Dashboard just announced a tour that they're going to be playing their second album, and I'm real excited for that. So yeah, how about you guys?
I mean, I was listening to rock music, I think, throughout. And like I said, I was playing lots of different bands, different instruments. But I think the one thing, I did get kind of like stuck in a rut where I was listening to the same bands for years and years. And you know, maybe I'd pick up like one or two new albums, but I would definitely not have an album of the year list up until we started playing again. And now like every year I'm discovering like 20, 30 new albums and listening to them all, you know, enjoying them all and really thinking about the different aspects of them and you know, what makes them special. So I don't, Mike, how about you?
Well, I kept listening to a lot of rock music in college, but for some reason after college, I guess since I lost access to other people that would give me recommendations, I kind of fell out and it's like I would listen to the old stuff. There's just stuff that I had forever until I reconnected with Teeves. And I mean, nowadays, like he sends me a new album.
Yeah, so
on our Slack channel, we have album recommendations.
It's just Teeves
like every day we get like three or four, like listen to this album, listen to that stuff.
I mean, I don't know. I work a lot and I don't get to listen to music for pleasure as much as I would like to, but I pretty much just check out whatever Teeps tells me to check out. I mean, that's pretty much how I find anything that I listen to.
We know, like, definitely listen to it if he recommends it more than three times.
Yes.
Like, once, just, like, check out a couple songs. Yeah. Twice, if he recommends it twice, listen to the album through. If he recommends it three times, listen to it at least like five times.
Or if he mentions that he really bought good tickets to their show the day that the album came out.
Or the vinyl. Yeah.
For Microwave, what? I probably hit you up four or five times.
Yes. Like, yeah. I was like, all right, I got to listen to this album all the way through, like serious listening, not just in the car. Yeah. And I did. Like, I'm in love with it now. Yeah, it's probably awesome.
That's awesome. It's really rad, like, having someone who like that in your life who's able to kind of like push you to expand your tastes and everything. And I know Microwave, I saw that they put up like a limited edition special like screen printed cover or whatever of the album, and I was like so mad that I missed it. It was like out of 100, it sold out in like less than an hour, I think.
Yeah, I missed it too. I was bummed. By the time I checked, it was gone.
Yeah, I'm such a sucker for like alternative artwork. It's probably like one of my favorite things about collecting vinyl.
We're putting out a vinyl.
Yeah, we're excited. We're
for the first time.
Yeah, our new record will be pressed.
It's a good segue.
Little Elephant.
Oh, rad. Yes. Yeah, Little Elephant's awesome.
Sure. Yeah, we're definitely excited to have at least that option, you know, for this time around. So
yeah.
All right, here we are about to wrap up the interview. Before we do, I want to give a quick shout out to another podcast I enjoy. This week, I'd like to feature The E-Word, the official podcast of the emo subreddit. You might know them from the incredibly in-depth interview they recently did with Christian Holden of The Hotelier on the album Home Like No Place Is There. Another great feature they do is the yearly E-Word Freshman Class, where they highlight the best new bands. It's actually where I found out about Proper, the guest on episode 1 of this show, when they were still known as Great White. Other episodes of The E-Word feature plenty of interviews and other great discussion to help you stay connected to the scene, so please check them out.
I like to end by kind of asking what is either like a piece of advice or kind of like an interesting observation that you've had lately on your mind, either about like music specifically or just like life in general.
All right, well, as I said earlier, like a while ago, I went through some stuff. But in the process of going through that stuff, I learned a lot about myself as a person. And I came to the realization that I need to change my expectations of myself and what I think life should be, and try to really enjoy what life actually is for me at this moment. Mm-hmm. And since then, I fell more in love with music, like doing music. I fell more in love with doing photography, and I discovered a love of painting. And all of these things, like, they probably wouldn't have held this much importance to me if I hadn't gone through what I'd gone through. And I think sometimes you need to go through a tough time to, you know, like, really find out what's important in your life.
Yeah. And I just want to say, Mike's an amazing painter. He actually painted our cover for this album. And,
yeah, he painted the art, yeah.
What is it? Your Instagram, Consume Paint?
Consume Paint.
Yeah, he's got some incredible incredible stuff up there.
Yeah. This is Kenny. I would say for me, just like everybody has their own path. You know, all of us went, you know, whether it's this band or just generally in life, like all of us went completely different directions after high school. And, you know, we went in so many different ways and we had so many different and varied experiences, but we can all come back together and play music and make art together. And, you know, I think that's a lesson for like life, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you come in and out of people's lives and, you know, there's so many different peaks and valleys that you go through. But everybody has their own direction that they need to go. So, you know, for me, that's kind of a big piece that I've been thinking about lately, as I've been trying to raise two kids now and, you know, just live life in community with other people.
You miss 99% of the shots you don't take.
Michael Scott, right?
Michael Scott, no. Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott, Teams Boy.
And now another episode of Flying the Call comes to an end. If you enjoyed it, and I hope you did, please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hit up Apple Podcasts for a rate and review, and let me know if you have any feedback. Thanks so much to Out of Service for taking the time to chat and letting us premiere the first song on their sophomore album. Definitely keep your ear to the ground for Burn-In later this year. A special thank you to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane Palermo for the artwork. Follow the show on Twitter or Instagram at FlyInTheCallPod, and feel free to reach out to me there or via email at flyinthecallpod@gmail.com. Remember to check the socials on Monday for a hint at the next episode's guest. I have a lot of fun coming up with the clues, and the first person to guess right will hear the episode early. Thanks so much for your time and support.
Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.